it's na na na's and air guitars, or is it something that gets you through?
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It's the 13th of August. It's 15 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to our program. Listening to the music just a moment ago of Ruthie Foster playing the Egg in Albany on Friday, the 16th. You can find out more by going to theegg.org, theegg.org. I was at a group of people not too long ago who had been in this area for a long time who had never been to the Egg. And I said, you have got to treat yourself to one of the great venues in the country, much less the it's unusual, it's funny, and it's a really cool place to see a show. So Ruthie Foster playing the Egg in Albany on Friday, the 16th, theegg.org. The next night, on Saturday, one more plug, and then we'll get on with the show. The next night, Saturday, August 17th, I'm going to be in conversation with a brilliant man by the name of Peter Heller. Many of you may know Peter Heller. He is a fantastic novelist who has written books such as The Last Ranger, The Guide, The River, The Painter, and probably best known for The Dog Stars. That won a lot of awards when it came out. He is a wonderful naturalist, a wonderful writer. He wrote a great book on surfing. I do not surf. I have never surfed. I never will surf. But he wrote a great book on surfing that had me riveted, called Kook, What Surfing Taught Me About Love, Life, and Catching the Perfect Wave. And a rare opportunity to see him and to hear him. He's going to be at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, at 6 p.m. on Saturday. And I'll be in conversation with him, and it'll be a great event. I finished the book last weekend, and it's just terrific. It's a really, really good, a little post-apocalyptic, but only by maybe a couple months, like after the election. And it's called Burn, and Peter Heller will be with us in conversation. If you want to find information out about that event, go to northshire.com, northshire.com. All right. Let me welcome our group this morning, and we will get started official-like. Terry Gibson is here, preceptor in public speaking for the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard University. Terry Gibson, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Doing really well. Why are you so down on surfing?
Oh, no, I love surfing. I don't surf. What my point was, I don't surf. I have no interest in surfing because I'm a klutz. The name of the book
is... Well, this could be a great way to build up your coordination, build up your confidence. Come on, give it a try, Joe. Come on.
I was laid up for a year because I couldn't walk downstairs, Terry. I don't know. Anyway,
but it's just water.
I know. And that's the thing. The book is so riveting. It wants you to just jump on a surfboard, but I will never do that. But I love reading about it. It's that's wonderful. But I'm glad you're well. Thank you very much for being
here. I'm well.
It's good to have you. Good to have you with us. Judy Patrick joins us, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Hello, Judy.
I, too, am an armchair surfer. I will never surf. You would think the water would be soft, but it's hard when you land on it.
Yeah. And I enjoy watching it. I enjoy being in the ocean while other people are doing it. I have a whole branch of my family. In fact, I have a great niece. Is that what they are, the great nieces?
They're all great nieces.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Yeah, you know. The niece of a niece, the child of a niece is a great niece. Is that right? Is 9 and is a championship surfer.
No.
Yeah. In South Carolina and on the Eastern Seaboard.
Wow.
So, it's a great sport. Anyway, good to have you here. Thank you very much as always. And our dear friend, Mark Whitman, joins us, Wall Street investment banker. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. I surf all the time, actually, on the internet. but
see what he did there?
Never in water.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you here on land. I think we're land folk. And now, Terry, you said that, like, so you surf?
No way.
Okay. All right. I got it. It's good to have you all here. Very nice to have this group today. We have good stuff to talk about, and we'll get started right away. So the FBI is probing an alleged Iran hack and attempts targeting both the Trump and Biden camps. And ultimately, that, of course, then goes to the Harris campaign as well, right? And so suspected hacking attempts targeting both a Trump associate and advisors to the Biden-Harris campaign. That, according to people familiar with the matter, as the agency formally acknowledged Monday, it has opened a high-stakes national security investigation months before the election. Three staffers of the Biden-Harris campaign received spear phishing emails that were designed to appear legitimate but could give an intruder access to the recipient's communications, according to people familiar with the matter. So far, investigators have not found evidence that those hacking attempts were successful. The FBI began the investigation in June, suspecting Iran was behind the attempts to steal data from two presidential campaigns. Agents contacted Google, among other companies, to discuss what appeared to be a phishing effort targeting people associated with the Biden campaign. The new details show the investigation is broader and involves more potential victims than previously known. It also underscores the degree to which hacking by foreign nations targeting U.S. political candidates may simply be a recurring feature of politics in the digital age. U.S. officials concluded that Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election to help Donald Trump, including by hacking and releasing internal emails and documents from Democrats. We can confirm the FBI is investigating this matter, the agency said in a brief statement. On Saturday, the FBI said only it was aware of the media reports of an alleged hack. The Trump campaign said it had been hacked after reporters received copies of an internal campaign vetting document on Senator J.D. Vance, Donald Trump's running mate. An official with the Harris campaign says it is vigilantly monitors and protects against cyber threats, and we are not aware of any security breaches of our systems. Mark Whitman.
Joe, interference from foreign entities in U.S. politics has been a feature of our country since 1793. The first president to deal with this was actually Washington when a French ambassador tried to sway U.S. Opinion towards the French by using propaganda and actually privateers to stage sort of false flag maneuvers in the United States. The irony here, by the way, is the one that the individual who they think was initially hacked may well have been Roger Stone, who, if you're keeping score at home, has been to prison. And is one of the charges that he was found guilty of was lying about his attempts to get information that was hacked from the Hillary campaign. So I would suggest if you get an attachment from Roger Stone, don't click on that.
Or any email.
Yeah. And the Trump campaign said that they're taking additional measures, including enlisting outside help for security. Let's hope that's not CrowdSource or CrowdStrike in their case. But I think this just underscores the importance of making sure that we have an educated, informed, and intelligent electorate. And whether it be the misinformation that the Trump campaign spreads on a daily basis or whether it be information that comes out as a result of these hacking attempts, it underscores the fact that the burden will be ever heavier on our populace to discern what's important when they go to the ballot box. Unfortunately, the digital age has laid clear that at least for a generation or two, we've been inadequately preparing our citizenry to be effective customers of information or effective consumers of information. And we've got a lot of catch up to do. But I don't know that you'll ever stop the incursions. I do hope that someday you'll inoculate an electorate against some of this mischief.
I have two thoughts on this, and one of them is that, and I realize it's not a rational thought. I just want to put that out there, that it's not a rational thought.
But go ahead, Joe.
But here you go. And that is, as I was reading the articles and listening to the coverage last night on this story, I thought to myself, what possibly could they have that's weirder than what we know? Like, what else is there that could be, like, even weirder or more disturbing than what we've already been privy to? That's not to say that we shouldn't be vigilant in this and to do all of the things that you just outlined. My goodness, we should. And yes, we to your point, we should be an educated electorate of what is true and false. But it also just seems to go into a system that already is very much lacking at times in true information. And, we're being brought into question as to whether 15,000 people really turned out to a rally because nobody was there, according to the Republican candidate.
I actually think, Joe, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about it this way, but I actually think the Democrats are far more vulnerable to this than the Republicans, and I'll tell you why. What Trump has tried to do since he began flailing, and he did it at the NABJ conference and in other venues, is try to goad the media and the Democrats into discussions about issues like racial politics, race identity, and the like. Why does he want to do that? Because low information voters, when they hear the airwaves filled with that sort of discussion, they become uneasy, and they attribute to the discussion, no matter where it started or who's saying what, they've historically attributed that to the Democrats.
Right.
That's what Trump did successfully in 2016, particularly, and he's trying to revert to that playbook. So if there are leaks out of the Democratic campaign that start to fill the airway with those types of discussions, which, if you notice, Kamala Harris has tried to manage very carefully by not getting into the specifics, I do think it would serve as a more significant detriment to the Democrats, because it will disturb particularly low-information voters and dovetail with what it is that Trump has done successfully historically and what he's trying to do again, and the Democrats are doing a better job of managing this time around.
And I don't know if this is still a true statement, but as of last night, the reporting was that it was that the Biden campaign was not as impacted by this because they had not opened any of the emails where the Trump campaign had on several occasions. So there is that. Judy.
Yeah, it's we as a nation need to be against this, no matter what candidate, what party gets affected by it. And it's incumbent upon both parties to do a good job of protecting their computer systems from attacks. And it's expensive. And it's ironic because Donald Trump was very critical of Hillary Clinton, you know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, because her system got hacked, and he complained that she didn't do enough to protect her system. I should also note that the documents that were hacked were released to by a guy named Robert with an AOL account, were released to the New York Times and Politico. Now that's up to the news organizations to determine, you know, is this really valuable to report? And I haven't seen a great deal of information that they've actually taken that information and run with it. And that's what happened with the Hillary emails years ago. We had to make these decisions about, is this newsworthy? Is this fair? And you saw what happened afterwards.
Terry Gibson.
Yeah, I'm glad the FBI is investigating it. That's certainly necessary. But I'm not so sure what good it's going to do in the short term. This election is moving at such a lightning pace. It might be after the election before they can really answer all the questions they already answer about it, and then we can maybe put up some kind of safeguards to prevent it in the future. I would have hoped that those safeguards would have already been in place based on the experience we've had with this in the past elections. This isn't, as has been mentioned, this is not a new concept of foreign entities trying to infiltrate our elections and influence. I worry more really about various foreign players creating fake videos and fake social media posts that implicate one candidate or the other saying or doing something they didn't do, and those becoming viral and being believed by what was mentioned, low-informed voters. I think that's a real danger and something we really should all be looking out for. I'm sure some of that stuff's circulating already.
I'm going to pause
I do think it's a...
I do think it will be the first words that will be spoken after the break, okay?
Oh, okay. Very
all
good.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hear what is on Terry's mind right after this short break in news from the BBC.
I've got friends sweeping their dreams across the floor.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Judy Patrick, Mark Whitman, and Terry Gibson, who was speaking right before the break and started with, but I believe, and we'll let him finish his thoughts on what we were talking about, which is the FBI probing the alleged Iran hack attempts targeting both the Trump and Biden-Harris campaigns. Go, Terry.
Well, I would just be really suspect of anything coming out of the Trump campaign's office, from their staffers, from Trump himself at this point. They're so desperate to get back to being at the top of the news cycle on a regular basis, they're resorting to anything they can think of to grab attention. So they seem to be the campaign making the most noise about these hacks. I don't think you're hearing nearly as much coming from the Democratic campaign. I would be interested to see if Russia was being investigated for hacking the two campaigns, and maybe they are, and we just don't know about it. But if that had been the lead story instead of Iran, I'm just curious if the Trump campaign would be making any noise about it. I think because it is Iran, and they have really come out against Iran, and it is certainly an enemy of the United States in every aspect, they're okay doing that. But with Russia, I don't know that they would be saying anything. So to me, that's interesting. I don't remember them making a lot of noise about Russia interfering with the elections back in Trump's first election.
Well, actually, if you remember, he encouraged Russia to interfere with the elections.
Russia, oh, yes, if you're
that's
listening.
Right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. Get me Hillary's emails, right?
Yes.
It was eerily reminiscent of the find me the 11,000 votes in Georgia.
Yeah, Terry, you raised the interesting point about the credibility problem that the Trump campaign has. They're the boy who cried wolf a little too much. And so it's hard to believe anything that happens or comes out of that headquarters when, in fact, this could be a real attack on their campaign by Iran, who has many grievances against Donald Trump. But on the other hand, it plays to Trump's political advantage to be perceived by the American public as someone who Iran does not like. You see that as a prominent feature of their campaign.
May I ask you a question, Judy? If a news outlet opens their email account and finds in it, let's say, everything that was ever on the Trump servers,
mm-hmm.
and they know without a doubt that this information was obtained through illegal means, but they had no direct involvement, they didn't request it, what are the ethical standards about whether or not they release that information?
So
what are the legal standards and what are the ethical standards?
So the first thing you have to do is verify that it actually is true, that it actually is from the Trump servers.
Let's say we're sure.
You guarantee that. If the Trump campaign acknowledges it, I think is the easiest way to make sure that it's real, that it's something that comes over the transom, as we say, is fair game. You can use it. It's ethical. It's what you have to do is look at it as any other piece of information. Is it newsworthy? Is it something the public has a right to know? Is it important for the public to know? And can you put it in the proper context to make it easy for the public to understand? But if something comes over the transom, as we say, you know, I guess doors don't have transoms.
But
anymore,
even if let's say the FBI calls, you know, the Judy Post and says, hey, we're sure this is that you just got the entire contents
of Judy Post,
the Trump server.
Uh-huh.
We know this was obtained through an illegal hack by the Iranians. We don't want you to use it. What's your legal obligation? What's your ethical obligation?
You say to the FBI, why don't you want us to use this? You have a conversation with them. If it endangers lives, if it endangers national security, you have the ability to use modified versions of it. There have been many cases where newspapers don't publish something or news outlets don't go with it.
So let me go one step further with Mark's analogy, which is what I read earlier. But the Washington Post and Politico have both reported that they were contacted by a person claiming to have access to internal Trump campaign documents who used an AOL account and the name
Robert.
The Trump campaign has blamed Iran for those leaks. So what is the responsibility of the Post and Politico at that point?
Right. Well, the one question is, do they have a responsibility to alert the FBI? That would be, I would think, one area where there would be a true ethical dilemma there. But in terms of actually using the content, if it's newsworthy, no problem at all.
And in this case, it had been the internal vetting documents of J.D. Vance.
Right, but I actually haven't seen that they've used them. I haven't seen a story based on these vetting documents at this point. Maybe they looked at it and said, you know, this is everything we already know all this.
Right, nothing new.
And as you said, maybe there's nothing in any of the documents they received that is more outlandish than what they actually hear on the campaign trail every day.
Terry?
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I think that the reason we're not hearing a lot about it is either because there has been just some incredibly devastating classified information that has been discovered that the FBI is begging them not to release, or it's just really boring and not newsworthy. I certainly think that if any media outlet got their hands on something that was newsworthy, especially in the vetting of the vice presidential candidates, where I think is the real danger of finding information. You know, like right now you're seeing a post out there on social media of J.D. Vance dressed in drag for a Halloween party back when he was in college. I don't know if that stuff's real or not. But those kinds of things make you wonder if there's more to his story. I don't know if there is. But I think that the reason we're not hearing anything must be because it's just kind of dull.
I'm struck by what you said earlier, Judy, about the Trump campaign crying wolf. I mean, you're doing this, and then in the same breath you're saying that the pictures of a Harris campaign stop, 15,000 people, not that they inflated it, but nobody was there. And my reading of it is that this came out of some right-wing sourcing that said that you could not see a reflection on the bottom of the plane, which led them to believe that was not, so it was fake. Apparently, they didn't realize that it was the way the plane was angled that it would not have produced a shadow image of the crowd, a reflection of the crowd. But yeah, it's hard to tell, and that's what you were saying also about Roger Stone. It's sort of rich to think of complaining because Roger Stone has such a tangled history with hacking.
I don't know his politics, but if I were the Harris campaign, I would ask David Copperfield to introduce Kamala Harris at her next stop with a big crowd.
Right. Credibility has gone out the door. I think that's why credibility is so important to our civic life, our citizens, our democracy. We need to be able to trust what a campaign says. Although, you know, we've always taken anything a politician says with a grain of salt. But there are certain things, you know, no more taxes, won't raise taxes. I mean, we take that with a grain of salt.
Read my lips.
But speaking of credibility, I would ask, maybe this is for Judy, if credibility is an issue, why are legacy media outlets even reporting that the Trump campaign is accusing Harris of using AI to manipulate photos? I mean, that to me seems not a credible claim. Why are they even reporting it?
Yeah, I agree. I think the legacy media is making many of the same mistakes that they made back in 2016, even in 2020, but mostly in 2016 by repeating things just because Donald Trump says them. I mean, he said a million, or no, I exaggerate. He said many things last night in his Twitter conversation with Elon Musk that were incorrect. But that's, people are talking about that today. I think we're giving him a little way too much air.
We go to Rocky, who says Trump urged Russia and WikiLeaks to hack Hillary, as we mentioned earlier. According to him, it's a legitimate tactic. Then John says, how can we have a literate electorate when millions of people listen only to channels like Fox and others with all the spin that they offer?
Right. And you have millions of people who don't listen to anything. I mean, they are tuned out. They're you know, fishing and surfing and not paying attention to the news. They never have, and they probably never will. They probably don't vote.
No, and I find them to be especially, that group, to be especially worrisome and dangerous, because if they do, they'll grab onto one thing without any context, which is often concerning. Terry.
Well, I think we should be careful to not put people in these categories, because that group may very well be the majority of Americans. It's not just people watching Fox News. I mean, that's certainly an issue, but it's just people relying so heavily on various social media channels to really get their news, and getting it in maybe 30-second sound bites. TikTok is now really like the largest media outlet on the planet. And so you have to assume that millions and millions of Americans are going there to get their news, and they're getting these little bitty sound bites. So I'm not convinced that the majority of society in our country right now is really informed on the day-to-day issues that are really pressing our politics and our planet and our future. So it is very frustrating, but I hesitate to just accuse one side or the other of having that problem.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, and Mark Whitman, and your questions and comments. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
She ain't no good for you. That's all right. Yeah, it's all right.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. 47 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Judy Patrick, Mark Whitman, and Terry Gibson. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. What was supposed to be Donald Trump's triumphant return to a social media platform central to his presidency was marred by glitches on Monday night when a live stream conversation on X between Mr. Trump and its owner, Elon Musk, was significantly delayed by technical issues. But once their chat did begin, about 40 minutes after it was scheduled, Mr. Musk's and Mr. Trump's newly developed camaraderie was on clear display, with the billionaire tech entrepreneur lobbing softball questions that allowed Mr. Trump to rattle off the talking points that have animated his presidential campaign. It's another way of saying there was really nothing new, little new information about Mr. Trump's views. Over the course of more than 2 hours, Mr. Trump attacked Vice President Kamala Harris, his Democratic opponent, as a phony who, along with President Biden, failed to address crossings of the U.S. border with Mexico. He repeated a number of false claims, including the 2020 election being rigged. The criminal cases against him were a conspiracy by the Biden administration to undermine his candidacy, and the leaders of other nations were deliberately sending criminals and their non-productive people, quote, to America. There was a moment where I was listening to this and I thought to myself, this reminds me of the person who is talking and talking and talking at the party and then says, oh, but enough about me. Elon, what do you think about me? And that's sort of what it was like for 2 hours. But there you go. Terry, as far as your concerns of having someone with a social media platform in this position lobbing softballs to a presidential candidate, especially given the tortured history of the two, of both Twitter and of both Twitter and Trump, and also Elon Musk and Trump, and now the emergence of X?
Well, I think first I would start off by just saying that, at least in my opinion, based on the research that I have done, that I feel very confident in saying that Donald Trump and Elon Musk are two of the most dangerous people on the face of the planet right now. And I mean that in all seriousness. And while it's funny to laugh at what they're doing, and some of it is comical, it should also take us all aback a bit and really realize that Donald Trump is poised to be the next president of the United States if Democrats can't figure out a way to beat him. That's a very real possibility. Elon Musk owns the majority of the communication network that we rely on day to day to communicate, to use GPS, and also that our military relies on. These two individuals are either have the power or are poised to have power to really revolutionize the way this planet functions moving forward. And so when the two of them get together to have this sort of hug fest on a social media channel that's owned by Elon Musk, I again question why it is getting so much news, because it is not a legitimate discussion platform. Elon Musk is not a journalist. It is nothing more than a glorified campaign stop, and it really needs to be scrutinized more by the media. So I'm a little upset this morning at how much coverage it's gotten.
Judy?
Yeah, it's a good example of how we should not cover these things, because the stories that we're reading from the New York Times, the Washington Post, their distillation of what happened last night makes it sound like it was a normal, legitimate conversation, a kind of a sane discussion. When if you actually listen to the ramblings, it was very disturbing. I mean, Donald Trump has a clear slurring of his speech now, or a lisp of some sort that was very obvious. I couldn't figure that out. And then the things he said were alarming. And so the question is, we often have this debate, should people really listen to all 2 hours of it? Would that be educational, or should we just ignore it? I think if you actually listen to the real words, how things went back and forth between the two, I think you'd walk away with a very strong sense of alarm. When he started to talk about the fact that he didn't think Kamala Harris was strong enough, and in fact, I'm putting that in normal terms, but the way he put it, she's not, strong enough to deal with Putin or other strong-arm leaders. And then he went on to, praise people like Putin as he concedes that they're vicious, but he feels that that's a good quality, especially if you listen to what he says.
Go ahead.
I think, Judy, I think the media has to cover it. I think they ought to do a much better job. I don't know, Joe, where you got that commentary that said that Musk offered softballs, but that's an inadequate description of what happened.
That was the New York Times.
Okay, that's nonsense. What Elon Musk did was repeatedly try and coach Trump so as to make him appeal more moderate, at least as moderate as defined by Elon Musk. But let's get Elon Musk's definition of moderate out there. He did not offer any opposition when Trump talked about the legal cases against him, Trump, being bogus or rigged. Elon Musk said nothing. Elon Musk was incredibly sexist when he referred to Kamala Harris. He said she wasn't strong enough to offer a meaningful counter to the nefarious leaders around the world. And he offered absolutely no rationale as to why, leaving it clear that he thought that was because of her sex. I thought that was just repugnant. And for the New York Times not to specifically address that, Elon Musk also said that the Democrats were responsible for inflation because they had increased spending. Now, that's not only wrong, but it's really wrong in terms of what causes inflation and why the Democrats aren't responsible. Elon Musk also has his own theory of climate change, which says that we don't really need to worry about global warming, because what we really need to worry about is at some point it's going to become really difficult, if not impossible, to breathe the air. So we don't need to worry so much. And he said, well, I don't think we have a 400-year time horizon ahead of us. I think we got to worry more in terms of 100 years. So I think if you cover it properly, both of these guys come off as miserably uninformed, holding positions that are counter to the interests of all Americans, if not all people on the planet, frankly. And I think the media just needs to do a better job of describing what the heck actually happened. To focus on the fact that they got started late because there was a glitch is a lazy way to write the article, and it's a lazy way to start the article. They need to start it with, he coached him. They both have ridiculous, unsound views. And if you want to mention at the end that it took him a while to get the whole thing started, that's fine.
Yeah, I think as they were doing the live coverage, it was necessary for them to say that this hadn't started yet. Also, I don't know that it would have been newsworthy had they not had the same problem when Ron DeSantis made his announcement on X and the Spaces platform on X. Also, but what does it say? And I'll initially ask Terry this, but I'm interested in everyone's opinion on it. But what does it say, Terry, when you say, okay, so you have Elon Musk who owns X and is having this platform with the former president who's running on the Republican ticket as the Republican nominee, and when the time came for the president of the United States, Joe Biden, to announce that he was stepping down from the ticket, he used X as his platform to make that announcement.
My
little Joe brain just wants to explode.
Yeah, it is a dilemma. I think that all campaigns and candidates running for all offices right now, you know, from local to state to federal, they're all having this dilemma. You know, one of the reasons, and this is my own theory, can't prove this, of course, is that the reasons these stories from the legacy media are starting out talking about the technical glitch is because it's their way of kind of hitting Twitter, which they know is serious competition for them. You know, Twitter is a media outlet, serious competition for them. And they would just want to point out that this outlet isn't quite up to speed in terms of its technical capabilities. I think that's why they're doing that. In terms of why Joe Biden and these others are using a platform that is owned by someone that is clearly endorsing Donald Trump, especially for Democratic candidates, it's a problem because they need a place where they can get their message out, and they need a place where they can do it and have as much control over the message as possible. I know we're going to talk about in a moment here about Vice President Harris sitting down for an interview. Well, one of the things you want to be able to do is to really control the message. And when you put something out on a social media platform, you have control of that in ways that other platforms don't necessarily offer. And there are a lot of Democrats and independents and people that will vote for Vice President Harris and for Biden, for that matter, on Twitter. I'm there, too. And it frustrates me that I'm there because I can't stand Elon Musk. But it's hard for me to find another place where I feel that I can find all the other people that I want to hear from communicating, because all the Democratic candidates are on Twitter. So it's a place where I can go and see them all. So what we really need is a competitor to X that can begin to offer something new and different and more credible, but no one has stepped up to do that yet.
Yeah, Threads didn't work.
By the way, I was looking through my notes. The other thing that drove me nuts about, well, there are a number of things about Musk yesterday, but when Musk said that he wanted to prove that Kamala, as he called her, Vice President Harris, was too far left, he said, well, of course she's too far left because her dad was a Marxist economist. Now, everyone in this country who wants to take responsibility for everything their parents did or said, please raise your hand, right? I mean, if that isn't the most imbecilic remark I've heard this week, you know, it's in the top few. I don't think there's any way you're going to get perfect news outlets. I really do go back to the fact that, look, we educate Americans in a compulsory system for however many years it is. Is it 12 years in this country? And we need to do a better job of it. And you can make good citizens out of people by teaching them how to discern what's true and what's not without having a political bent to it when you do it. And you'll never get a perfect news source. I mean, look at what the New York Times wrote about that conference last night. It's garbage, to be polite about it, at best. And I mean, it's destructive because it doesn't fairly characterize what happened last night. And so you're never going to find a perfect counter. If Elon Musk and Donald Trump want to get on a service and spout this nonsense, that's their right in this country, and God bless them. But we have to have an electorate that can see through the nonsense. There's no substitute for that.
All right, we'll take a break. And I just want to my imbecilic quote of the week. This is from the Trump rally in Montana. Kamala Harris, you know, it's interesting. Nobody really knows her last name, he said. If you ask people, do you know what her last name is? Nobody has any idea what it is. Harris. It's something like Harris. I don't know. How the hell did that happen? I leave you with that. We'll be back right after this.
But I'm running out of things to do.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. We are talking currently about Elon Musk and the conversation that he had with Donald Trump on the X platform last night in the Spaces space. We have a lot of letters. Let me get to as many as we possibly can. And I think these are both about that and about other topics that we've discussed so far. But we go to Betsy, who says, instead of talking about the former president and convicted sexual assaulter's interview with Musk, you could have talked about our current president's thoughtful interview done over the weekend on CBS this morning. We did yesterday, Betsy, to give fairness. We did. That is a lot more noteworthy. Biden's first interview since he dropped out of the race, and he had a lot more important things to say than Trump or Musk. And we covered that yesterday, and I understand. But this event was last night, and that was Sunday. So,
and the point is that this man, the man who was talking last night, is running for president again.
That's right.
And could be our elected president in November to rule this country for the next 4 years.
Well, that's probably the best point, Judy. Yes.
Isn't he supposed to govern it for the next 4 years?
He's going to rule. He's going to rule.
All right. Let's go to Rachel. In any given year, the nation's report card shows fewer than 50% of students in eighth grade regarding proficiency, proficiently, meaning most students do not read well enough to support meaningful reading comprehension, let alone critical thinking. That percentage shrinks when we look at students leaving high school. This leaves us with a huge part of the population that, out of necessity, is getting its information from YouTube and TikTok and news outlets that offer issues in simplified sound bites. Want to turn it around? Make sure every school in your area is focusing on evidence-based, comprehensive reading instruction. Until that happens, we will continue watching democracy decline, and it's accelerating. Well, you have a candidate who wants to get rid of the education department.
The other thing you...
Well, as a... go ahead.
The other thing the news media can do is present the information in ways people will absorb. I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of people who've already graduated from high school. They can't be the lost generation. We can't live with poor civic knowledge until the new generation of people come through. What we need to do is be where the people are. That's what we in the media have realized. If TikTok is how they're getting the information, we need to get TikTok information. We need to be on the TikTok platform giving people good information in ways they will consume.
I know a lot of real newsies who go on TikTok and get information, and it's accurate. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's dumbed down. I mean, in some cases, in any platform, anywhere, it can be dumbed down. But it's who's putting it up. It's who's actually supplying the information. Terry?
Yeah, I think everything Judy said is absolutely correct. I agree. I was just going to reflect on my own experience. I'm in the classroom almost every day with young college students coming from a wide variety of backgrounds, both nationally and internationally, and the challenge of engaging them in critical thinking, the challenge in engaging them in critical, just oral discussion, and the challenge in getting them to look up from their phones to actually acknowledge that there are people in the room is ongoing. And it's really clear that this new generation is they are communicating in a different language than many of us who are on this program today or listening today grew up with. It's a different language. It's a language that uses less words. It's a very symbolic language. It's a very visual language. And it is just the way it is. It's what they've been raised with. They've been raised with things like TikTok and all the other social media outlets they have in their hand. And I think Judy's right. The media that wants to engage this generation and all generations really needs to meet them where they are and speak in their language. And I think that's a challenge that many media outlets are still trying to figure out how to do.
All right, back to the letters. Kevin says, I think Mark makes an important point when he mentions the failing of education in our country. If you think about the problems we have with the masses not able to apply critical thinking to issues or common sense decisions, kids drop out of school not being able to participate in the job market, contributing to crime. There seems to be a dumbing down of America, and Trump wants to eliminate the Department of Education, pay the teachers more. Johnny says Biden's announcement was not released exclusively on Twitter. It was released on all major social media platforms simultaneously. The major media apprentice just gets their breaking news from Twitter. And so I think many perceived it that way and reported it that way. I will say that when it initially came out, it said it was first reported on X, for whatever that's worth. Jim says 60% of Americans over the age of 25 have only a high school education. The country is insular. The education is shallow. There is little critical thinking going on. We deserve people like Trump. Then we go to Diane. This quote from the late German historian Hannah Arendt says it all about Donald Trump's fabrications. Quote, this constant lying is not aimed at making the people believe a lie, but at making sure that no one believes anything anymore. A people that can no longer distinguish between truth and lies can no longer distinguish between right and wrong. That from Diane. And T writes, would you also point out how the Orange Menace was slurring his words throughout last night's event? That's something Judy brought up. One more occasion where the media is giving him a pass that would never be extended to Joe Biden.
Right. He was coming up with the words, but they were slurred in such a way that it was distracting. It was a lisp or a slurring of some sort that I don't typically see in his rallies. Maybe it was the time of night that did him in. I don't know, but there was for a minute, I thought maybe it was the a technical problem that his voice was being distorted. And I have not heard anything from the campaign in the last 12 hours or so explaining the lisp, which was very evident and needs explanation.
The media should also highlight, I don't know, I hadn't seen it, that he obviously had somebody next to him. Trump, had someone next to him coaching him because he was far more cogent and far more on message. Matter of fact, it was clear they were sticking a note in front of him saying, go back to the economy, over and over again. And you can't run this country by auto cue, but I think it's unfair for the press to cover what happened last night without mentioning that Trump had someone next to him coaching him. Because I actually thought, in terms of if I were Trump, I would do last night's format every day that Elon Musk offers me the opportunity. I think it presented him in sort of the best light that I've seen in a long time. But I think that's for a number of reasons, including the fact that Elon Musk was actively coaching him, not just softball questions. That's an inaccurate and inadequate description. But he was also being coached by someone in the room with him.
From my file, what show are you listening to? We read this letter from Chris, who says, as someone who fishes and surfs, I take offense to the idea that people who do the same are not informed nor vote because they may not listen to the major news outlets. Did we say that? We were talking about surfing.
Mention that there are some people who do not pay any attention to the news at all. I mentioned that there were some people who just fish. I mean, obviously, there are anglers out there who do pay attention to news.
Okay, but you could have said pickleball, right? It wouldn't have made any difference.
Right, we had gone fishing. I was on vacation last week.
We talked about
that.
Surfing. We talked about, yeah. So, all right.
No disrespect to the anglers out there.
All right. I don't think that's... Yeah, go ahead.
Defense, in defense of people that maybe decide they just want to tune out the news, let's just say that you did that for the last 72 hours. What exactly would you have missed? What would you have missed that would have really mattered? I mean, I think that's a serious question. There is so few places to go in the media where you can really get information that really does matter, because the things that really matter are often not being covered by major news outlets.
That's a great point. That's a really, really good point. All right, two more letters. Janet says, flagrant, willful political lying should be a crime. It is a form of election interference and a misuse of public airwaves. I am pleased to learn that Wales is considering criminalizing politicians who lie. Why should the public be exposed to flagrant untruths of the kind that Trump regularly spouts? And finally, we go to Parker, who says, good morning. Maybe this is going to sound arrogant, but I've seen these fake AI videos. They are so ridiculous. I don't know how anyone can believe that it is real. The only reason I think it works is because people want to believe it. Americans crave entertainment, and the more outrageous, the more entertaining it is. That is from Parker this morning. And then...
Wait, is Parker saying that those two guys dancing in black suits on the sidewalk were not Elon Musk and Donald Trump?
maybe not. And Maureen, and I don't know how to take this particular letter, I don't know if this is factual, if this has been checked, or this is just an opinion, but Maureen says the slurring is dental.
Someone suggested that his Polydent or whatever he uses to keep the teeth in line was not doing its job last night.
Okay.
No. You've all got it wrong. The reason he's slurring his words is because Donald Trump is an animatronic robot. He's the next generation of Disney animatronic robots. We all know that.
All right. So the former president of the United States took questions for nearly 2 hours last night from Elon Musk and answered a lot of questions, often without fact and with tangent. However, the question then becomes, and it's something that Trump has brought up several times, is when is Kamala Harris going to start taking questions? There have been some social media videos that have been going around of her doing these quick go rounds when she gets off the plane. They last about a minute and a half. They're very quick. They're very quippy. But it is not a sit down sort of fact based interview. So that brings us to the Washington Post, whose editorial board has written a piece that said, since replacing Joe Biden at the top of the 2024 Democratic ticket, Vice President Kamala Harris has neither given a sit-down interview nor held a news conference. Her campaign's website lacks an issues page. There is only a biography. We get it tactically. It's tempting for Ms. Harris, as it would be for anyone in her position, to stay as vague on the issues as possible for as long as possible to avoid giving fodder to the opposition or dividing her supporters. Ms. Harris is confident she'll win if the campaign is about the many flaws of former President Donald Trump. Mr. Trump makes her task easier by regularly spouting falsehoods and wild rhetoric, such as his crack about Ms. Harris's racial identity. But at least he's taken questions, including hostile ones, both at the NABJ and at a long news conference on Thursday. If she hopes to prevail, Ms. Harris needs to present her ideas. The media and public have legitimate questions, and she should face them. This is a political necessity. So that brings us to the questions. The name of the piece in the Post is Questions That We'd Love to Ask Kamala Harris. Mark, what do you think those questions are?
Oh, I want to take a different tact. I thought this piece by the Washington Post, and I actually, you may have selected it on your own, but I actually sent it in. I thought it was absurd. First of all, it misses the point of this election. This is a different election than we've had before. I don't think we need to go through.
I just want to set the record straight. You sent it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked at it, and I said, oh, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
Mark, once again, has hit a home run. And then I put it on the docket.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I actually think it's absurd because the Washington Post in the article said, well, the other reason it's important for people to enumerate their positions is to build a political consensus so that they have a mandate once they're in office. I think that's wrong. I think Kamala Harris needs to get into office to defeat Donald Trump. I think that if you look at the list of the top five reasons of why she's running and why she should win, that's it. So I think this piece sounded like it was warmed up, sort of reserved from another election cycle. I think the calculus that Kamala Harris should run is the following. If she doesn't enumerate positions to some extent, she'll be penalized by the electorate. She and her campaign need to do the calculus and figure out what they need to enumerate, when, so far as she doesn't incur more of a penalty for keeping her positions quiet than she'll get once she enumerates those positions. I do think there are, there are three Kamala Harrises. There was the Attorney General Kamala Harris. There was the Kamala Harris that ran for president, and that's the Kamala Harris that Donald Trump, even though he refers to as a far left liberal from San Francisco, that's actually the Kamala Harris that he wants America to see. And then there's the Kamala Harris that was the vice presidential candidate. She does have a lot of explaining to do. I do think the moment of greatest risk for her campaign is when she does those initial sit-down interviews, given her history of being a bad interviewee or having trouble communicating it as an interviewee. That's the biggest risk for her campaign. But I would encourage her campaign only to go so far as they need to politically to satiate the electorate and not incur a penalty for not having expressed her views. I just thought that the Washington Post saying, well, she needs to build a mandate to govern, misses the actual whole point of this election cycle.
Judy?
I so totally disagree. Because the public has a right to know where she stands on positions. I understand the tactic. The longer she can be without positions on things like on any issues, the safer she is. But the ends don't justify the means. And we have a tradition in our democracy of encouraging people to be well-informed about the candidates they vote for or vote against. And while I appreciate the fact that once she comes out with positions on certain items, she's going to be attacked by the Trump campaign and it may lose her some votes, I still think that we as an electorate need to know where she stands. We need to know what her policies are. We need to know what she wants to do once she's in office. What we've heard so far are platitudes, some really nice platitudes, and we've seen a lot of, we know that, she's in favor of a woman's right to make the own decisions about her health care. We know, but we don't know so many other things that we have a right to know.
So, two questions. One is, would an interview change that? Meaning, would we know any more at the conclusion of that interview than we would prior? And two, to me, more alarming is the positions page on the website of actually having your stated positions on the website in front of God and everybody, so that you know where she stands. And even if it is in coordination with the Democratic platform that will be ultimately unveiled at the convention in Chicago next week.
Right. The Democratic platform will be revealing, and that will give us some indication. And whether or not you'll get anything out of the interviews, it depends on how forthcoming she is or how evasive she is. It depends on the interviewer. It depends on the outlet she chooses to sit down with. I was concerned. Last week she said, well, my staff is working on this, and we think we'll do something by the end of the month. This was in early in August. She's going to wait until the end of August, and then there's September, October, and then we vote. Let's get this. Let's be accountable to the people. Let's be transparent about where we stand, about what kind of a president you're going to be. It's easy enough to go to the rallies and make the same stump speech again and again and again to a different audience. But I, as a citizen, want to know more.
And Terry, I mean, there's a lot to go. Well, your initial thoughts before I ask you follow-up questions.
Well, I'm just reflecting back on my experience in politics, and if there's one thing that I learned during that time, is that the media is a tool that should be used with great caution. You know, just because the media wants to hear from you doesn't necessarily mean you need to talk to them. You have two different goals. Her goal right now is to get elected, and they need to do what they need to do to achieve that objective. Otherwise, nothing else matters. It is August. It is not a time where you have a lot of voters really paying a lot of attention to the campaign. When you do decide to speak in a public way, reveal some things you haven't revealed, you want to make sure people are listening. You want to make sure it's going to be covered accurately. You know, just because you make a statement to the media, just because you share a policy position with them, does not in any way guarantee that they're going to regurgitate it back to their public in the way that you said it. They're going to twist it. They're going to change it up. They're going to question it. So it's important that they find the right time to begin to speak in more actual, clear policy terms. It's important they find the right platform. I feel certain by the time the Democratic convention is over, there will be very little doubt about where Vice President Harris stands on every single issue, and they will certainly have an issues page up by then. I think we have to give them a little bit of credit. You know, she just became like the nominee like yesterday. So they do need time to develop these things. And so I feel actually really good about how they're handling the media right now, and I hope they'll continue to do it with great reserve.
Terry, one thing I would say is the excuse that she just was anointed the expected nominee is why she hasn't done an interview. I actually don't buy that. If she were really good, if one-on-one interviews were her best form for communicating with the public, she would have done a slew of these already. They would have found time for her. I don't mind that they're hiding her. I get the objective. It's winning here. And I do think this is different than other elections. I think the Washington Post missed that. But I don't think we should be fooled that they are intentionally hiding the ball here.
Right. And again, it's whether the ends justify the means. And is she setting the tone for, if she's elected president, is this the kind of transparency she's going to offer me as a citizen? Is this what her administration is going to do? Is she not going to have press conferences? Is she not going to sit down with the press? Is she going to encourage people not to reply to the Freedom of Information request? What kind of transparency is going to be part of her governing strategy?
Judy, is there something she could put on that list of responses to questions or her or the platform that would cause you to change what I expect your vote will be?
No, I want to know, but I want to know. I want her. I do want to know because
I understand, but if I may, not to be an obstinate journalist.
Who knows?
Can you answer my question?
No, I don't know. I'm assuming things, but you never can assume things. And also, the media is not a tool. The media is the representation of the American public. We ask questions that people, the average citizen, aren't able to.
It's not a tool. Just many people in it are tools.
It depends on how your perspective.
It's neither. It's a business, but anyway.
It's a business, but it's also one in which we ask the questions that average people aren't able to ask. We ask the questions that Elon Musk isn't going to ask.
Sometimes you do, but not all journalists are as ethical or as good or as talented as you. Some don't
we'll
ask
give
the
you
right
the
questions.
Last
Some ask the wrong questions.
Word on that. We'll be right back.
Death and hatred to mankind.
Ruthie Foster providing the music this morning, playing The Egg on Friday night, theegg.org for more information. All right, let's go to a couple of letters. We're wrapping up in just about 10 minutes or so, and we can get a lot in before then, so let's try to do that. Barry, why can't we all give her some time to get her stuff together? This is regarding Kamala Harris and as far as the push to have her do a news conference and a sit-down interview. Pamela says, I know everything I need to know about Kamala Harris. She's not the former guy. The only statement she could make that would change my vote is she suddenly endorsed Donald Trump. Then Jen says she's done an amazing amount of events, publicity, decision making in the last 3 weeks. Look at her excellent VP choice in record time, and answers reporters in between these incredible rallies where she has articulated her values. Give her a chance to have a sit down interview. She's been busy. She's pro-choice, anti-assault rifles, pro-middle-class worker, pro-union, etc. It's clear what kind of president she is going to be, one for the people. Love the show.
If she, for example, gave a better explanation about why she changed her position on fracking, she may win over some voters in Pennsylvania, for example.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but that's a very, very minute sort of issue at this point in time. I mean, I understand your point. I'd love to. I'm not happy about her changing her position on that, actually. So, but I'm still going to vote for her. I just want to defend the Harris campaign a little bit more and just say that I just don't think this approach of one-on-one interviews is a good choice for them right now. They need to be motivating voters, getting them excited. And I think they're doing an excellent job of that with these big rallies that they're having, and I hope they'll do more of them soon. Yes, there will definitely come a time where they have to get down into the weeds of all the issues and find a good, credible journalist that they can do that with. But right now, it's really about showing up at these big venues, getting lots of people out, because you can tell that people are hungry for that. The numbers are showing that. The change in the polls are showing that. They're hungry for that. They're not hungry for these one-on-one interviews. That's just my take on it.
She's going to the back of the plane and talking to reporters. She's taking the time to do that, but it all has to be off the record. I mean, how much time does an interview take? An hour? Probably even less.
It only takes one comment about one thing to be twisted by one journalist to really disrupt the entire progress the campaign has made, and they're very cautious about that, and I think it's rightly so.
You either trust her to be an effective communicator or you don't.
Well, I think she is an effective communicator. She's making strategic choices. You know, if you're a public figure, or if you're a corporation, if you're a nonprofit, you use the media to communicate to your target audience, and you use it with caution. If you use it in any other way, you're setting yourself up for a public relations crisis. And so I think they're being very responsible in how they use the media right now.
But don't you think this is becoming, and I'll check my term, but I mean, this is almost becoming a public relations crisis of her not doing this. I mean, this is becoming...
I don't think so. I think it's a crisis for the media because they're upset they're not getting more time with her. But I don't think it's a public relations crisis for her. It's clear by the numbers that that's not what people are screaming about.
Yeah, Terry, I disagree that we shouldn't expect her to be capable. This is a woman who allegedly was one heartbeat away from the presidency for the last 3.5 years. So she better be up to speed on this stuff. I think it's clear historically she's been a bad interviewee. I do think last night's forum between Trump and Musk shows why, if you're the Harris campaign, you wait as long as you can. Trump and Vance and the Republicans have still yet to find a way to really pin Harris down in a meaningful way on anything that sticks. And if you're Harris, particularly given her history as an interviewee, I wouldn't risk moving the date up where I might do that any sooner than I have to.
I think we should differentiate between someone in the private sector or running a nonprofit and someone running for public office, particularly the highest office in the land. If you're running for public office, you have a greater obligation to respond to the press. You just do.
And she's a sitting vice president. I mean, it just seems to me that there's a I'm okay. Make fun of me. I'm going to go into fantasy land for a moment. But if we're going to get back to whatever normal was in politics, whatever that, right? Probably never. But the point where politicians running for president, presidents, vice presidents would regularly hold news conferences and would regularly have meetings with the press to talk. If we want to get back to that, which I think is essential for us, then I don't know what you have to lose. And as far as the timing, well, I mean, you say Mark's rolling his eyes, and I understand why.
Yeah, the presidency to lose to Donald Trump. That's what's on the line here. And by the way, all this kumbaya, let's have an open, transparent,
communicative, to hell with that.
Communicative president. Let's wait until we until the Democrats prevail. I'm not saying she shouldn't do anything, but I literally have no problem with them running the calculus and saying, we're not going to talk until the cost of doing so is worse than the risk we're running.
But I agree with Judy in the sense that she has seen, while there has been some problems in the past, I think she has overcome much of that. She seems to be an incredibly effective communicator. I don't think there's anything that can be thrown at her that she wouldn't be ready for.
She's a great communicator, but you can't run this country by auto-cue. That finally caught up with Biden, and the Harris campaign knows it, so eventually they will have the interviews. And by the way, Judy, just to make you even more frustrated, and I agree with Terry. I think only people in the media think this is a quote-unquote crisis in terms of timing, okay, because they're upset. They're not getting their cut.
Well, it's becoming an issue for the Republicans, and they're making a big deal about it.
Because they want exposure. There are no chinks in the armor. They want to find those holes in the armor, so they want a better look in that interview. And just to drive Judy nuts, what Kamala Harris said on the campaign
Let's drive Judy nuts.
Was not that she would do an interview in August, but that she would schedule one by the end of August.
And again, I don't think it's a crisis. I think it should be done. Crises are attacks of war. I mean, yeah. I don't want to overuse the word. It's not a crisis, but she needs to do it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We have about 5 minutes, and I want to go to a couple of more letters. Deborah says, isn't it customary for the campaign to come out with positions? Where does she stand? After the convention, assuming this is a party inclusion process, why would she jumpstart with positions ahead of the convention? And I guess this also gets into an issue of, well, if she were a candidate who had gone through a primary, then she certainly would have had that up there and it would have been discussed. We do have her answers to the questions from 2020.
But she's walked away from 2019. She never made it to 20.
That's
she's walked
true.
Away from the bulk of those, frankly, or many of them.
Right. And so there is that. We got this from Claire, complaining about this, really? Donald Trump does 2-hour news conferences, but all he does is reiterate past grievances, disparage opponents, and spread lies. Where were the policy statements he made last night or any night? His policy is Project 2025, which he denies.
Oh, can I add one from last night that I thought was really entertaining? Donald Trump implied that global warming wasn't so bad because it did create more beachfront property as the oceans rise, which, by the way, is wrong, but it's an interesting take on the whole problem.
come to Harris's responsibility. It's not for the press. It's to the people. But the way that's supposed to work is the way you inform the people.
She doesn't have the time to talk to every single person in America. That's why we have the press.
Well, you get to choose how you inform the people. It's their choice. It's their choice about how they want to communicate to the people. And right now they're choosing to do it through large rallies and through social media where they can control the message. I'm sure at the right place and time, they will sit down with someone and interview. But just remember, as I said before, when she has an interview and she makes a statement to the person that's interviewing them, there's no guarantee that the statement will then be sent out from that media source in the way that she said it. It could very well be taken out of context. It could be cut and edited. So this is the problem that all candidates face. They have real difficulty controlling the message, and I think that's why they're being very strategic about this right now.
This is the problem with every public relations person that wants to control the message. The journalists are not stenographers. We put things in context.
That's right. That's your job. That is your job. But people that are using the media to try to communicate have a different set of priorities. And I think that's just the natural way that it is. And the two have to find a way to work together.
2 minutes. Robert F. Kennedy cannot appear on New York ballot. The judge has ruled. What say you?
Off
Yay.
With him. he clearly does not have a residence in New York, and you have to have a residence in New York to be. There was a fundamental flaw in his petition.
The judge said it was a sham address to claim residency in New York.
The judge was right. I'm not so sure what the new configuration of the race that the Democrats should be so quick to wish for the back of his candidacy, RFK's candidacy, though.
You know, politicians have historically played fast and loose with residency, though. I mean, people claim that they live in places that they own or they stay once a month. But this Kennedy was, they had the person he was claiming as his address, he was staying in their spare room once in a while. It wasn't, typically it's an apartment they rent or a house that they own and maybe stay in for a week or two. This was clearly an exaggeration of residency.
And this is only, and I just want to be clear on this, this is to be on the ballot in New York State, not to be on the ballot across the country. While there are other battles, obviously, across the country to get his name on the ballot, but this is this particular ruling was just in regards to New York State.
Yeah, but the issue is he used that address, the New York address, in a number of other petitions to file in other states, so he's now in jeopardy in other states as well.
The Democrats are showing contempt for democracy, he said. They aren't confident they can win at the ballot box, so they're trying to stop voters from having a choice. We will appeal, and we will win. The words of Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. All right, we'll end there on this Tuesday morning and thank our wonderful panelists, Terry Gibson, Judy Patrick, Mark Whitman. Thank you all for being here. Great pleasure, as always. We'll continue with the roundtable right after this.